I'm in the Pleasance Dome, and I've never been this close to the Sox. The last time I saw the Sox, I was about 20 feet away from them. And I've wanted to get closer to the Sox for a long time. So I'm not sure which Sox is going to talk to me first.
And as always, people are expecting us to have names, and we don't, and neither do I, and neither does he. But, hello, we are the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre, and so am I, and so is he.
Can you tell us what it's like professionally to work with Kev Sutherland?
Well, we try and keep a distance from him, so while we're doing our show, we assume he's somewhere else writing the Beano.
But, you know, over the years, would you say your partnership with him has improved or got worse?
Well, he likes to take a lot of responsibility for the material that we deliver, although, in fact, it's me. Is it? It is. Hello, I'm the sock that's on stage left. So I always have to think where I am, because I'm on the right from where I stand. And the show is, I'd like to think, entirely my work. But this Sutherland fellow does take credit for some contributions.
To both of you, the big question. I know a lot of people have asked me to ask this question. Yes or no?
Do you know, we've been asking the audience that. Every night we ask the audience, we say, so who will vote to set England free from the shackles of Scottish rule? And there's a moment of silence because nobody can work out whether the answer is yes or no to that. I think everybody would be happy if the ballot form had I written on it.
Do you have separate lives after work?
Yeah. We're two sock puppets on the end of someone's arms. How far apart do you think we can go?
Oh dear, so you don't really have lives of your own then? Oh, that's a shame.
We have a drying reel. And by God, we need a lot of drying by the end of a show. And can we just apologise to everybody who came to our Monday night show this week? It was absolutely the hottest our room has ever been. We're working on it. We've got lots of fans, but they don't seem to produce cold air.
That's something else that I've been asked to ask one of you particularly is, are you actually a member of the Stuart clan?
Oh, that's very good. You've noticed it's Royal Stuart. And there's two tartans that Queen Victoria approved during our lifetime. They were allowed to be used by the English. And also, I think this was a stipulation, they're allowed to be used on shorty tins. And we've modelled our set very closely on the shorty tin, the one that would have a wee Scotty dog on the front and a picture of a Highlander. We are actually eligible to wear a number of tartans. We could wear the Sutherland tartan or the Farquharson. Farquharson, yes, I am a Farquharson. I've always thought that. But the thing is, one of them looks a bit gay and one of them looks a bit travelling rug. And it's only the Royal Stuart that looks, well, it looks like the sort of thing you expect when you want to see tartan. So we go for the shorty tin look rather than the big dark, because all of our tartans are dark. That's why. We could wear a Sutherland. Also, when that man Sutherland, who takes responsibility for the show, when he comes out, he is also wearing a Royal Stuart kilt. But that's just because he's a light entertainer. Also, he's cheap. If he had 800 spare quid, we would be wearing a Sutherland kilt at all times. But we don't. So apologies for everyone at home who's offended by us wearing a Sassenach-orientated kilt.
And the reason I ask is because actually there's a sock under your kilt and there's supposed to be nothing.
Yes, nothing is worn under our kilt apart from a sock with a shitload of holes in. You'll have to edit that out, won't you?
Okay, can I bring Kevin in now if that's possible?
We'll just go get him.
Okay.
And at this particular moment, can we just point out we are divesting ourselves of our customary hands.
Hello. I'm here.
Kevin, I promise not to edit anything out of this free riffing interview here. Kevin,
Kev, sorry.
How?
Very, very pompously, when I was at school, I stopped calling myself Kevin and I went for Kev F because science fiction writers used to use their middle initial. So I thought Kev F Sutherland looked really sophisticated. I didn't realise how common Kev was going to prove to be. Kev was the my childhood equivalent of calling yourself Gav or Nev or Spaz. I've never worked out what Spaz was short for, but I went to school with two Spazzes. One of them was Tony Sparrow, and yeah, in our school we hadn't yet adopted that as the offensive term for scope recipients.
Well, I'm glad you've mentioned school, because I want to go back in time in this interview and just kind of find out that spark moment where you decided that sock puppetry was going to be a direction for your life.
I can tell you, there was a sketch show that I still do called the Sitcom Trials. A lot of people will be familiar with the Sitcom Trials. Last year, we did a tournament of it, which ended with a finale at the Gilded Balloon, which was part of So You Think You're Funny. So it was So You Think You Write Funny, the Sitcom Trials. And I've been running the Sitcom Trials on and off since 1999 for the benefit originally of my own sitcom writing, but it ended up being a format which we had a TV series of and loads of people liked to be part of. Miranda Hart was in our first Edinburgh Fringe Sitcom Trials show, and then one time I'd written some material and I didn't want the actors to bugger it up, and so I turned up at a writers meeting with some socks. I put the socks on my hands. They were funnier than either the actors or me. And they won that particular Sitcom Trials show, and they won everything that they entered. And it turned out that my time would be better served writing material for some sock puppets to perform than, well, doing what happened with the Sitcom Trials. When we would then do a touring version of the Sitcom Trials, we would get a slightly smaller audience than the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre would subsequently get, and I would have to divide the money between five people. Maths wins every time.
Now, probably every parent in the world at some point, if they've had access to a sock, has tried to entertain their children by putting a hand in it and, you know, do a routine. And kids have done probably the same and made puppets. But you've elevated it to an art form, haven't you?
The thing is, it started off much more art-oriented. I went to art school, and when I first did the sock show, and it was quite a revelation to have sock puppets being able to be this alter ego, because as many people will know, I also performed as a stand-up comedian. I now do no performance at all as a stand-up comedian, because the socks showed up my short comings in stand-up, and that is, I don't have a comedy persona that is as funny, I think, as the stuff I write. And you kind of look at my face and it's the face of a guy who, I don't know, it's not the face of, it's not John Richardson's face, it's not Jack Whitehall's face, it's not one of those personas that is the funny guy. Whereas the socks are. The socks look funny, the socks sound funny. And I then brought back the stuff that I used to do at art school, and so we were doing stuff. We'd try doing mime, we'd try doing situationist things with our performances in the street. And if you see the videos that the Sox did when they did their first show in 2007, they're really putting themselves out there, and sometimes they're doing things which doesn't involve any jokes whatsoever. It doesn't involve comedy routines, although we were also reappropriating the shtick of Abbott Costello and the approach of very old comedians. We're taking things from the 30s and 40s and 50s primarily. So we would look at Max Wall, like Samuel Beckett's favourite comedian, and we're thinking, yeah, that's where we are. We're Eugene Ionesco. We can be the theatre of hate. We can do all of these pretty pretentious things to appropriate. But the thing is, I did spend 4 years studying fine art. My degree show was billboards, which did rhyming couplets based on the rhyming couplets from the Burma Shave adverts, which ran alongside American highways in the 1940s. And I put the socks out there. We did a comic book, which wasn't a comic book, it was cut ups from newspapers. Now, that was all our 2007 stuff. And
so,
that, and
so I'm just checking. So you're Jackson Pollock, you know, you can actually paint in the world of sock puppetry.
Yeah, we've done very little visual art. Although, if you look at our blog this year, look at our Twitter feed, look at our Facebook, you'll find that this year's socks calendar is 12 images from modern art. We have done Eduardo Paolozzi this year. This month, August, it's Andy Warhol. We've got Banksy, Tracy Emin, Damien Hirst, Gilbert and George were July, Frida Kahlo, Christo doing the Valley Curtain with the socks in there looking over the top of the Valley Curtain. I can't remember all of the images, but that's what we did for our images this year, because we wrote a show, it was a half-hour show, because we were talking to some BBC producers. I shouldn't have said BBC. We talked to some producers whose work may still be in development.
Not BBC necessarily.
But we have been waiting a hell of a long time for anything to happen. And so, at the start of 2014, I thought our show this year was all going to be about art. We were going to do art again. And we did routines with Rachel Whiteread. That's one of the ones which nobody gets. It could be because we've done it very badly, but we've done this image, which is the socks in a concrete cast viewed from the other side of their set. I think I might have to do it again because it just looks like nothing. But then that's the trouble. Rachel Whiteread's casts of things don't look like things. And sometimes you can go too far by getting it right. But the socks show was going to be called Art. And when we did the Brighton Fringe, our show was entitled Scottish Falsetto Soap Opera Theatre, Do Art. And then I didn't realise, but once we got up to doing our Edinburgh preview at the Carriage Works in Leeds, the show was called Do Art again, because I'd booked the show in February. So we've got quite a lot of material about art. But when I tried it out very early in the year, it turned out that that stuff, I'd written it for TV. And the stuff that we do up here, we have to do stuff that's either written for or grows around live performance. Because what I discovered during 2007, I discovered it again with the Sock Show in 2008, is when the audience isn't laughing, I'm not comfortable, the socks aren't comfortable, and the audience aren't comfortable. The audience like the funny stuff. They appreciate our attempt to do the stuff that makes it look like you've got a degree, but they actually came along to laugh. And we attract a lot of intelligent but broad audiences. And although there's a lot of acts, especially acts at the Pleasance, especially Footlights graduates, who can say, we don't care if you're laughing, we're waving our intellectual underpants over our head, John Sessions, 1983. We have difficulty doing that. This year we've compromised by doing political satire. Now, it's quite light political satire. That is to say, a couple of our things are very pointed and I will stand by every box they've ticked. But sometimes they're just observational gags that include a mention of David Cameron. Which, actually, I've seen a lot of acts that profess to be political satire and they do nothing more than that either. But I know where I see the line as being drawn. There is clever stuff that is actually, you know, it's really clever political satire. The socks this year do 5 minutes of that. And the other bits are the bits where it's not Mike Yarwood, simply because it comes from a left liberal Scottish standpoint. You're talking to a man from Aberdeen who has this accent and it's not his fault. I've lived in England since I was three. But the socks do have a very Scottish sensibility. They don't have an expat sensibility, I don't think, so much. They chime with, well, our audience on Saturday night, where we asked the audience how they'd voted in the European elections, and they were 80% SNP. And I think Scottish SNP voters get a lot of what the socks want people to get.
If that answer was longer than your show,
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Because we're in the realm of art, which is good. Because welcome to the Fringe Review Anatomy of Sock Puppetry. Because I've got even worse questions for you that I wanted to ask you for ages.
I'm going to do these as Twitter length answers now.
Okay. Well, don't go too short, because the first question is, it's an artistic one really. When you first put your hand in those socks, did the voice come out of the socks or out of you?
Yeah, the voice came from the socks. It was the first thing that sounded funny, and that was it. I've not really used a funny Scottish voice before. The socks sound like me when I was three.
And hence the high-pitched voice.
That's it. This is funny. I'll tell you where this voice was done once before.
I used to work on local radio. As the funny guy in the studio on GWR in Bristol, which I think has changed its name now. And it's quite a populist station, so a lot of the stuff I was doing in stand-up wouldn't really work. But at one point,
I put on this voice, and I said,
Who sang the song from Titanic?
Celine Dion.
Celine Dion.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Celine Dion.
And then I just keep popping up.
And Celine Dion would pop up like this and say, yeah, hello, I'm Celine Dion. And what I thought about this was...
And I thought that was hilarious. And I believe to this day it was. And then after I'd been doing that for a couple of days, James Cannon, for it was he, was the broadcaster. He said, can you stop doing that Celine Dion thing? I don't think it's funny. And so Celine Dion went away for half a dozen years. And then same voice came back as the Sox. And people, or rather an audience of people in a room, which is the ultimate judge, they were right and James Cannon was wrong.
Next question, even more kind of arty in a way. When you're really in the zone, in the middle of a show, where is Kev's attention? Is it in the socks or is there still a separation?
When we're learning a show, there is too much concentration to think about anything else. And anybody who has watched the first five nights of the Sox current show, and so am I, will have noticed moments where their concentration has been slipping and they have fluffed bits of their new material. And that's very annoying, except when they fluff it in a way that they can then acknowledge and then we get a great laugh out of it. And when they're doing the double act bit, one can just blame the other one for fluffing it. But if they fluff a complicated thing like a song, the audience will just have not heard something properly. Once everything's bedded in, I'm thinking about a lot of things. Yeah, I think a lot of acts are thinking about this. They're thinking about, oh no, I didn't get any beer. So if I go straight home instead of going to the bar, the off licences are closed by the time I leave the show at 11:30. And in Edinburgh, you're not allowed to sell off licence alcohol after 11:30. So if I want a drink, I've got to go to a bar, but I don't want to go to a bar because I've got to do something at 10 o'clock in the morning. I've got to be interviewed by Paul Levy from Fringe Review. And that's how it goes. That's what you're thinking.
Another question that was sent in. Do you peek? Have you got a peek hole to see the audience?
A peek?
Yeah, can you see what's going on?
Visibly, yeah. Peeping. No. The Sox, and I hate giving away too many tricks of the trade, but when the Sox are performing, if you're in the audience and you heckle or you give feedback, they are sonar locating you. They're doing it entirely by hearing.
Okay. Is there a kind of bedside lamp and a script, or is this all in your head and you're kind of improvising a bit around it?
Now, I do hate giving away this bit of the trick of the trade.
You don't have to answer, but these are the things we want to know.
Yeah. At certain stages when a show is developing, and this actually really helps to write and rewrite a show, there is a script behind the stage. The script, by now, the script is actually abandoned. But the running order changes. Only my technician has seen seven performances of the show so far. But the show on night number one was in a totally different order from where the show is now. The finale, which is a version of Macbeth, changed on night four. Up for the first few nights, it was based on a straight performance of Macbeth. On night four or five, I changed it to being the allegory for the Scottish independence debate, which is the version that we do now, which is much better and much shorter. And that could only be done by having the script pinned up behind, knowing that it might change the following night. So Kev F., myself, the writer, is able to give the Sox notes and changes as early as you would do for a television production. And the Sox are able then to do a Tony Hancock The Blood Donor series, BBC 1961, where he was reading idiot boards.
And as we sit here in the Pleasant Stone, looking down at them sleeping there on the table, have they now got hold of you a bit? Or are you actually still able to completely let them go when you need to? Or is there a bit of madness creeping in?
Their characters are solidly there, and I zone out and leave their characters to do it. There's no part of me that can come into that show, simply because, listen to my voice, it's a very boring voice. This is not a comedy voice. I try regularly to say funny things, and when I'm sat around a sofa with comedians, I really feel very low down the pecking order, because they are funny. They hold their own amongst comedians. But unfortunately, they don't get to come to the Loft Bar. And I'm never going to try that.
But there are advantages to that as well, aren't there?
I don't know. Well, that's right. Comedians don't actually... The things that comedians talk about when they're not on stage is a different level of things. By the way, nobody does the Aristocrats routine. Have you ever seen anyone do the Aristocrats routine? I've never seen that. There was talk earlier this year, Alan Davis was going to do a chat show, which was going to be like when you're backstage with comedians. That would have been dreadful. I mean, a lot of people then joked about it on Twitter. And again, they came up with far better things than I came up with. And the funniest observations were, you'd have a chat show where everybody's looking over Alan Davis's shoulder to find a funnier interviewer. And you don't crack that sort of gag. You crack the sort of thing that they do on Fringe Pig, which is that other level, which is quite often unpleasant. And quite often you're just a bloke. Even the women are blokes, actually, quite often.
The last sort of arty question is, Punch and Judy was always the place where, you know, the harshest kind of form of puppetry happened. Have you chosen a similar way of presenting the puppets because we all associate permission then for you to do whatever you like?
I would like that to be one of those things that we bring out where the socks are able to say things that you can't say. The things that you're thinking but no one gives voice to. A couple of bits of the show where they do what I call successful satire, that happens. But the thing is, that was once upon a time. Nowadays, comedians do that. And, of course, they did back in the day as well. The Porter's speech in Macbeth, if you want to be historical about it, is someone saying something in character, he's a stand-up comedian, which the audience would have gasped at because he does this bit about equivocators. And that's big, that's clever, that's funny. It's essentially, basically, he's doing Frankie Boyle. Is this sort of thing that Frankie Boyle would do. And it's like, that's very successful stand-up comedy. The comedians have always said the thing that you couldn't do. There was a time when Pulcinello would do it in Commedia dell'arte, and Mr. Punch would do it. And then after a while, Mr. Punch just got boiled down to doing that same old shtick. I've seen satirical puppetry. I do a bit of it. Mr. Punch, though, seems to have copped out. If he's still willing to give it a go, I would applaud him for doing so.
May guest dwell on your show one day. But I've got one last question. It might sound a bit of a life coachy question, and you might, you know, not want to answer it, but it's a personal one. So some children's entertainers, for example, are kind of characterised as still doing at 80 and hating kids. Have you already imagined a time where you're going to put these socks away in the drawer for the last time and do something else, or are you now stuck with this forever?
No, I have thought about that, and the thing is, everybody always wants their act to be... Well, no. Sorry, not everybody wants this, but I am one of those people who would like my act to be the biggest thing. I would absolutely love everybody in the world to know the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre on their own merits. I would like everyone to say, yeah, did you see what the sock puppets did last week at 10:30 BBC One? That would be it. There isn't a slot for 10:30 BBC One. That's the news now, isn't it? I'd like them to have done a show in the Morecambe and Wise slot, the Miranda slot, the Mrs. Brown's Boys slot, but by being the Sox. And they're not that at the moment. However, what would happen then is that there would be a point where I would do Little Britain and put them back in the box and probably write some kids' books. So, as for what the future holds, until it holds selling out and retiring, I can't tell you.
Kev Sutherland, still loaded with ambition.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks a lot.